smarterpodcasts.com, delivering sound advice.
Welcome to Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf, number 27. My name is Fred Green, and joining me, as always, is Kenny Nicholson, technical specialist at Edwin Watts Golf and edwinwattsgolf.com. Hey, Kenny.
Hey, good morning, Fred.
How are you, buddy?
I'm doing awesome this Thursday morning.
Hey, Kenny, we're not even going to do any questions today from listeners until we get our guest on, because we want to spend as much time with this guest as possible. Why don't you make the introduction today?
Well, it's our honor and our privilege to have one of the most well-respected, and in my opinion, one of the best club designers out there, Mr. Jesse Ortiz, is with us today. Jesse, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, Kenny. I'm doing fine.
Thanks for joining us on the show, Jesse.
Oh, thanks, Fred. I'm honored to be on.
Now that you know what a podcast is.
You know, that's right. I'm cool. My son thinks I'm cool.
Fred, how this happened yesterday is Jesse actually got lost in the building trying to find the bathroom and ran into me. So that's how it happened.
Kenny, you gave me that half-hour tutorial yesterday, so I really knew. So when I walked in last night, I said, I'm on a podcast, and my son said, oh, man, that's cool. Hey, do you know how those things work? You know, and it was like, yeah, I do. I sounded like I was smart. Yeah, 24 hours before, I would have been a buffoon.
So, Jesse, it is our honor and privilege to have you with us. You and I spoke yesterday actually in my office, and you flew back to the Bay Area. Glad you made it back, but it's always great to have you in here, and your insight and your philosophy on things are wonderful, and I love to talk to you and hear from you. If you would, just give us a quick background, on how you got into the club business.
In 1960, my dad started the Orlemar Golf Company, and a lot of people were familiar with Orlemar during the 60s and 70s. We were one of the top-played Persimmon Woods on tour. We made clubs for everyone from Tony Lima and Ken Venturi to Johnny Miller to Weisskopf to Ballesteros to a lot of the stars of that era, Trevino, Chichi, all of them. And we did very well up until the mid-90s when really metal took over. And in 1997, I was able to convince my dad that we ought to, if we couldn't beat the son of a guns, we had to join him. We had to make a metal wood. So that's when I got lucky with the club, a multi-material club head that became the Tri-Metal, which took the company from $1 million to $100 million in 18 months and changed the way. Really, that club changed the way all fairway metal woods are designed and made. Every metal wood today can trace its lineage to that Tri-Metal from 10 years ago. So, that was my background. I'd learned how to make clubs at a very early age. By the time I was about 12 or 13, it wasn't, it was no big deal to have someone like Ray Floyd or Tom Weisskopf look over my shoulder while I was grinding one of their clubs. So, I grew up in that environment. And then in 2003, I left Orlemar to start on my own again with the Bobby Jones Golf Company, and that's what I'm doing now.
Awesome. I'm sorry, Kenny, I got to interrupt because this is a burning question for me. The name Orlemar has really become synonymous with the metal and the tri-metal, and it was such a huge success. Everyone was talking about it. Where did the word Orlemar come from? What's it mean?
Originally, there were three partners, Fred Ortiz, Liendo, and Martinez.
You're kidding.
And Liendo and Martinez left within a couple of years. And as they say, my dad was left holding the bag by 1963. He brought on another partner, Richard, a good buddy of his, Richard, a fellow machinist. But the origin of Orlemar was Ortiz, Liendo, and Martinez.
Oh my gosh, you didn't even realize that you guys were making a hybrid then.
You're right.
So what's happening with the Bobby Jones Company now? What do you guys have a lot of interesting products going on? What's exciting?
Well, I've we really got a really good push a couple years ago with well 3 years ago with our hybrid designs. I've never really followed, Fred, what the other manufacturers do. You know, when you've been in the business as long as I have, you know, you kind of stick to your own mindset, and I just have a different way of looking at clubs. I'm a little bit more traditionalist than the other people who are designing clubs. In fact, I like to consider myself a dinosaur, or actually like the missing link in the chain. I mean, there isn't anyone in the golf industry who handmade persimmon woods for the stars of the, you know, really the stars of the 50s and 60s, and is still making metal woods today. You know, I kind of am that missing link between a whole lost generation of craftsmen and, you know, the CAD/CAM computer designers of today. So a lot of my designs, you know, look very different and unusual to a new generation of golfers, but really for golfers who have an eye for tradition, my clubs look very appealing and classic. So, you know, I started with a hybrid that looks kind of like a clique from the turn of the century, and put in some design benefits in there that make it very unique from anything else that's on the market. And then now we've added some other products from there.
Yeah, if you look at the product, definitely from the face angle, the majority of the hybrids out there on the toe side is more of a squared off type toe and heel area. And if you look at the Bobby Jones, it's a very, what I call a traditional, they call it kind of swept away. It's very... It, for me, in order to hit a club successful, it's got to be something that's appealing to the eye. If you're not comfortable standing over us, you're not going to hit it good. And they do a great job of representing what I would consider to be the most traditional looking hybrid out there. And not to mention the playability of the golf club. I would stand behind this product with any that are on the market right now. I mean, as far as playability, look, feel, you name it, Jesse, you guys have hit a home run with this one. What the Cambridge sole, you call it a well-contoured sole. Mm-hmm. What is the purpose of having the design that you have versus a lot of the others that are a little bit more flat?
Well, I think, you know, people got to realize, Kenny, how hybrids came into being. You know, they here in this country, they were really designed to be long iron replacements. So they started to make their way on tour as replacements for a one iron or a two iron. And obviously irons have very flat, straight leading edges. So, you know, everyone, I'm fond of saying that there aren't that many original thinkers in this business. And, you know, there really aren't. Everyone's kind of like, they're like lemmings, you know. If one product is popular, everyone starts copying it. And I just don't have those kind of preconceived notions. You know, I just try to make stuff that is going to look better and play better. And, you know, I understood that golfers wanted something that would hit the ball about 175 yards to about 215 yards, which would be kind of like long iron distance, but they needed versatility. And a wood design gives you more versatility than an iron-like design. And if you could, you know, if you're in the rough, if you're in some bad lies, side hill lies, the turf or the ground, if it causes the club to twist, you're not going to make good contact. So when you know, all the hybrids that had come out on the market with the flat soles and straight leading edges, they're great to hit off the driving range, and they're great if you're in the middle of the fairway. But, you know, golf is played where the ball lies, and, you know, a lot of us don't hit it in perfect spots all the time. So what you need is something that's forgiving, that's going to get you close to the green and at least give you a chance for a chip and a one putt or two. And, you know, take a double bogey and put it into a, you know, change it into a par or at worst a bogey if you can get a chip and a putt down.
A lot of the clubs that are being developed today, and we've talked about on this program, seem to be developed for the high, for the low handicap player, for the better player, for the, you know, scratch golfer and not much more. Talk about the playability for the rest of us with your clubs, with the Bobby Jones clubs.
Well, Fred, what happens in our industry is that there's this mentality of trickle down. of the pyramid of influence that one of my competitors likes to use, where if you make clubs that appeal to the very best players, that it'll trickle down and everyone else will then use them. I don't necessarily subscribe to that. I believe that it's possible to create clubs that look and play and appeal to the better players, but that have design features and benefits that help the average guy. I mean, it'd be very easy for me to make clubs that only work for very, very good players, but I'm not going to sell many. Kenny will tell you that. I mean, the watch stores, they make a living on the average golfer, not off the super hot shot. There's a lot more of us average golfers out there. So
here, here.
You know, I try to make clubs that appeal to the best players in looks and in playability, but it's got to be able to work for the guy who's trying to break 100 for the first time. It's easier said than done. I mean, for me, it's been easy because I've really gotten into the woods and the hybrids. That's what I'm really known for. It's a lot tougher to do something like that, say, in irons, because with irons, you have better players may want no offset, they may want a thinner top line, they may want a square toe, and the average golfer wants offset, a thicker top line, you know, all these other features that go into the design of the club. So it's harder to take care of, with one model, golfers, you know, one model of iron with golfers. It's a lot easier to develop a wood or a line of hybrids that appeals to a wider range.
What do you think people should be sacrificing if they're putting a hybrid in their bag? What clubs come out? And you also, and I'd love to talk if we can, about the wedge collection that you have with Dave Pels. You know, how many wedges and what about hybrids? Or should we be carrying fairway woods or just a driver and a hybrid? What do you suggest?
Well, I think there's been a whole bunch of a lot of misconceptions, a lot of smoke and mirrors with hybrids. You've got companies now that are calling some of their irons hybrids. You know, we've got an iron hybrid, we've got a fairway hybrid, and I think it's all a bunch of baloney. A hybrid is a hybrid. A hybrid should be designed to replace your long irons. The average golfer is by far better off with a true 3-wood or a true 4-wood and or a true 5-wood than they are with a strong lofted hybrid. The hybrid heads tend to be smaller. They've got a low center of gravity, but they don't have as low a center of gravity as a fairway wood. A fairway wood head is a little bit bigger. It's a little deeper. The CG is deeper, and the shafts are longer. Remember, the longer the shaft, the further you are away from the ball, and the more reason you need to have a bigger head. Hybrids are smaller heads. Doesn't make any sense to have a hybrid that's if you're an average golfer and you buy a hybrid that has 16 degrees or 17 degrees and the shaft is 43 inches long. You've got a smaller head to make contact with. I mean, if that made sense, then why are we making 460cc drivers at 45 inches? The further you are away from the ball, the bigger the head should be. And I really believe that golfers should just, you know, go into shops and realize, hey, am I better off with a true 3-wood and a true 5-wood? And then start looking at their hybrids to replace the long irons. And the other mistake that a lot of golfers make with hybrids, they try to get too much distance out of them. They think that the hybrid should give them 3-wood distance or 5-wood distance. That's not true.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but that's a great point that I want to kind of, you know, ask this question while you're answering this, Jesse, is because the misconception on the consumer side of it is you're trying to fill these voids in lofts rather than in distances. And there's a reason why an 18-degree 5-wood and an 18-degree hybrid are not going to go the same distance, and you can touch on that.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. A 5-wood, even though the clubs have the same lofts, Kenny, the size of the head, the center of gravity, and the deepness of the CG, in other words, the wider body of a fairway wood, is going to give you a higher trajectory. And because the 5-wood is typically an inch and a half or 2 inches longer than your typical hybrid, it's going to give you more distance. Hybrids should be looked at as control clubs, just like irons. If you're too far away from the hole with a 6-iron to hit your 6-iron, what do? You grab a 5-iron and put the same swing. That's the way hybrids should be looked at. You know, people get a hybrid and they try to get 230 yards out of it. You know what? If you have like one of our 21-degree hybrids, it's going to go about 200 yards, except the distance that hybrid gives you. If you want to hit the hybrid 180 yards, then what you do is get the 25-degree. You know, look at the hybrids as first control clubs and then understand what distance gap they fill. With the fairway woods, it's a lot different. You're really looking for more distance than you are accuracy in fairway woods. In hybrids, you're really looking for control or accuracy and then the proper distance.
So let's give one away.
Yeah, there we go.
That's let's man, give I knew away. You were going to ask that. You always come to that, Fred. That's the only reason you like me.
Well, yeah, you're probably right. But anyway, let's give away the hybrid. Hybrid of your choice from Bobby Jones Golf. Go to golfsmarter.com and click on the button labeled contest. Fill out all the information. We're going to make the deadline for this September 9th. Deadline for entry September 9th. Then we'll announce the show after that. Again, go to golfsmarter.com, click on contest and fill out information as often as you'd like. Do you mind if I take the conversation over to the wedges now?
No, whatever you want to do.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask you, you're partnering with Dave Pels, you've created a wedge collection with him. Give me a little background on that.
Well, I know that the world doesn't need another wedge, just like I know that the world doesn't need another driver. Kenny knows this better than anybody, and the world doesn't need another hybrid. You know, it's like there's already too many manufacturers out there, but being the dinosaur that I am, I really believe that I have a lot to offer, or a unique view of products that it's completely different than what's out there in the industry. And I won't enter an equipment category unless I really believe I can make something that's significantly different and better than what is already out there. You know, I don't want to sound arrogant, but when you've been in the business 47 years, I don't know it all, but I've probably seen it all. And I just have, you know, in my heart and soul, I just believe that if I can make something better, I'll enter that equipment category. And really, wedges have been, and I think Kenny would probably agree with me, wedges have been the lowest tech category in golf equipment. If you take a look at drivers today and drivers of 30 years ago, they're unrecognizable. It's completely different. Take a look at fairway woods today and 30 years ago. Even putters now. You know, the elaborate exotic designs of these mallets that are out there and with weights floating all over the place and sight lines and everything. That's a far cry from the old Ping Answer, you know. But wedges, if you grab a wedge from today, it looks virtually identical to the wedge from 30 years ago. And it doesn't make any sense to me. When I hooked up with Dave 7 years ago to work on his wedges during my last year at Olimar, I learned a lot from Dave about wedges and how they work, why they work. He was hired by the USGA to work on the collecting the data for the USGA Ping Square Groove controversy many, many years ago. A lot of the listeners will remember that, about how square grooves spun the ball more than V grooves. And he did a lot of work in getting pros to do this, to collect the data. But one of the funny things was that at the end of the session, Dave would always ask the tour pro, well, hey, let's take your wedge that you have in your bag and hit it and let's see how it bites and spins. And in every case, the wedge that the pro had, which was his old favorite, would spin less and not bite on the green like the square groove or the brand new V groove. So he learned that the faces of the wedges wear out very, very quickly because wedges are made out of very soft metal to give you feel, but that works against you when you start practicing. And I think a lot of the listeners out there will remember, you know, all of us are about the same age. We'd remember growing up playing golf, and you'd play with an old timer, and he'd pull out like an old Wilson staff or an R90, and he'd say, "Hey, take a look here, son. Look, I love this wedge. Take a look at the grooves. I've worn them out. I've even got them dished out." Well, he was proud of the fact, right? "Oh, look at this. I can do everything, anything in the world with old Betsy here." But that really doesn't make any sense. You couldn't get any spin. So Dave and I worked on this, and he told me that every pro on the tour changes their wedges every month, and some of the guys like Phil and VJ change every other week, because the edges of the grooves wear out. So I came up with the material for Dave that we put it in the face of the club so it would not wear out. So it's really the only wedge. And now with the USGA changing the groove deal, it's interesting. But right now, we've got the only wedge that you can buy that will still be spinning the same and still be effective till 2014, when everyone's got to kind of change over to the different kind of grooves. So, you know, I'm excited about the wedge because it is very different than anything else that's out there. It's more expensive, but I think it's a value product because it will last you for many years rather than just a season. And it fits in with the Pels. It does fit in with the Pels system, which is, you know, the three hand positions and, you know, the four different lofts and all that. And Dave is real big on golfers having at least three, if not four, wedges, because, like, he's very fond of saying, "Jesse, how often can you one putt after you hit a four or five iron?" And I said, "Not too often." And he says, "But how often can you one putt after you hit a wedge?" And I said, "Well, not as often as I'd like either, but certainly a lot more often than after I hit a five iron." And he said, "That's why people need three or four wedges, because it makes no sense for manufacturers to make you 12 clubs that get you from the tee to within 100 yards, but from 100 yards and in, where all your strokes are lost, you only got two clubs, a wedge and a putter. You ought to have at least three wedges, because as you get closer to the hole, the contour of the terrain of the course gets more dramatic. You got a lot more side hill lies. You've got rough. As you get closer to the green, you've got a variety of shots you have to play. You don't have a variety of shots to play when you're 185 or 90 yards out. You're just trying to get close to the green or on the green. When you're close to the green, you're looking, do I want to be left? Do I want to be on the right side of the green? Do I want to be on the left side of the green? Am I going to hit the ball short and run it up? Am I going to hit it all the way to the top of the flag? You have a lot of options that are very difficult to accomplish if you only have one wedge and you don't practice hitting 1,000 balls a day like the guys on the tour. So why not increase your chances of one putting after you hit a wedge, bring in three wedges, and learn how to use each one?
So, Jesse, we're having way too much fun here. We'd like to make this into two episodes, and so you'll join us again in a couple weeks?
No problem. I'd love to be back.
Take care, all Jesse. Right.
Take care, guys. Thanks so much.
All right, now, Kenny, before we go, last time we had Bob Vokey on, another phenomenal conversation. Hey, and thank you, Kenny. You're getting some great people on this show. This is really exciting stuff.
And we've hit some home runs, haven't we?
Yeah, it's been awesome. Anyway, the Bob Vokey wedge that of your choice that we're giving away, we received 273 entries, and you get to pick one of them, and the winner is going to be number what?
It was through 273?
That 273, I sorted these randomly from all the entries that we received and took out all the redundancies. 273 unique entries.
Okay, hold on. I like to pull random numbers. Mm-hmm. We sort them. It's no big deal, but this is my own fun little game that I play. So let me do this. Patience metal tracker. I am going to go with the total number of medals that the United States has as of right now, and that number is 94. Number 94.
Okay, number 94 is from Graceville, Florida. Where's Graceville, Florida, Kenny?
Graceville, I want to think, is just to the east of us, not too far.
Well, Matthew Dial D-Y-A-L, Matthew Dial, lives in Graceville, Florida, and he has just won himself a Bob Vokey wedge.
Yeah.
Congratulations. That's awesome.
Graceville, Florida. I think they're right to the east of us, not that far.
All righty.
About that?
Well, let's also remind people about the new website. You guys have launched a new website, which is really interesting. It's not. It doesn't look like a retail site. It's an educational site. I loved it. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, it's a work in progress. Obviously, we're trying to work out some kinks, but it's going to be very dynamic, very user friendly. We want it to be fun for the consumer to go there and learn about products and things of that nature, and it'll be fun. We're looking forward to it.
Yeah, awesome. All right, well, listen, if you have any questions about what's in your bag or what's supposed to be in your bag, we encourage you to ask Kenny. And if we use your question on the podcast, you'll receive a free Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf Hat. To submit your question, please go to golfsmarter.com and click on the tab that's labeled Ask Kenny. Edwin Watts Golf would like to thank you for listening to the Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf podcast and encourage you to get your free subscription to this show so that each episode is downloaded to your computer automatically. We'll talk to you again soon for another episode with Jesse Ortiz, another episode at Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf.